station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Hollywood, California. Our show is broadcast every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 5:50 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. If this is your first time tuning in, our show will help you to question your career reality. Now, this show is for you if you were, are, or might be considering a career in the entertainment industry. Our guests will provide advice and resource information on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in show business. Our guests work in various professions of entertainment, so that means that we will definitely have someone on the show sooner or later from a career that you are interested. So you have to tune into every show every week. It's absolutely a necessity. If you want to check out our past guests, read their bios, listen to their interview instantly, or download one of the shows, go to the LA Talk Radio website, which is latalkradio.com. If you are listening from our channel, you're already there. You just go to the top of the website and click on the link that says Channel 1, scroll down and look for the graphic of our show, Question Reality, and click on the link. And this takes you directly to the Question Reality archive page where you can view a list of all of our past guests and, again, download the shows. Now, our shows are also available for download on iTunes, and we are under the podcast section. So you just type in Question Reality Radio in the search box, and there we are. If you want to find out about our future guests, though, you have to go to our official Question Reality website, and that has all of the guests that are going to be on. Actually, we are booked all the way until April. Yes, April. So if you want to find out who's going to be on the show, go to questionrealityshow.com, questionrealityshow.com. And as always, we have wonderful and fantastic and supernatural guests on the show, and we have another one for you today. Her name is Susie Groff. She is a writer, director, producer, and I want you to get your little pens and papers out to write some stuff because we've got a lot of exciting information about some upcoming workshops that you don't want to miss if you are pursuing a career as an actor. You want to also go to her website. It's lostinthecrowd.net, lostinthecrowd.net, and check that out while we're doing the interview. And if you have any questions, you can email, and we can forward those to her, or you can actually call the number that you are seeing if you are on the LA Talk Radio website, Channel 1, listening to us right now. So we are going to talk to Susie in a couple of minutes, but first we want to tell you about some exciting, exciting, exciting workshops if you are an actor. Number one, there is a two-week workshop that's going to happen on November 14th and 17th. Now, this is a must-take workshop for all actors. It is going to be awesome. It's for union and non-union, which is a little different. Union and non-union, we encourage you to attend this. The VP of CBS Casting, she is a legend. Her name is Fern Ornstein. Many of you have heard of her. If you haven't, you need to look her up because she is big, huge in the world of casting. She is holding a two-week workshop. Again, the dates are November 14th and 17th from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. There is early enrollment, and it's only $100, but that's only until November the 1st. Again, until November 1st, $120. Now, they're going to be held at 741 North Cahuenga Boulevard, 741 North Cahuenga Boulevard, LA 90038. If you want to call, it's going to be held at the casting workout. The phone number is 310-986-3000. 310-986-5680. Again, 310-986-5680. The casting workout is sponsored by the Exposure Studio, and there are no other parties that are involved in sponsoring the workshops. They're bonded, licensed, et cetera, et cetera. Great, great, great workshop. Now, just in case you want to know what's going to happen in the class, here are some of the things that she's going to be teaching: audition techniques, the business of acting, office etiquette. She's going to demystify the audition process. She's going to talk about how casting procedures differ between pilots, features, episodics, et cetera. Performance adjustments and feedback, because you're going to be doing a little scene. She's going to give some advice on seeking representation. There's a whole open forum, a Q&A. She is going to tell you what the general industry trends are right now in casting. Bring all of your headshots, because she's going to review everybody's headshots and say, yes, this is great, or no, this is why you're not booking anything. Your headshots are sucky. No, I don't think she's going to say that, but she'll tell you, you probably need to get some more headshots. So bring all of the headshots that you have. And most importantly, she's going to tell you what she feels that your brand is, because everybody needs to know their brand. They may think that they know their brand and they go audition for one thing, but they actually shouldn't be going at all to audition for that. So that's very, very important, because that is how you know to audition for the right parts. Now, Fern Ornstein, if you're not sure who she is, you can look her up on IMDb. She is the VP of casting for movies, miniseries for CBS. And Fern takes her workshops very seriously, so keep that in mind. She is going to spend day one getting to know you, going over your headshots, resumes, pinpointing what your type is, and helping you to improve your marketing materials. Now, on day two, you're going to be doing a performance and prepared scenes. This is a very rare intensive, and you need to go to this workshop. Every actor needs to go to this workshop. This workshop is going to save you a lot of money in your journey as an actor. So check it out. The next workshop I want to tell you about, again, this is a two-week workshop. It's going to happen on November 9th and 16th, and this is going to be given by Lindsay Jameson with Jennifer Cooper Casting. There is an early enrollment fee of $90, and Lindsay Jameson is the associate for Jennifer Cooper Casting, and she handles the hit a hit CBS show about an elite team of police forensic evidence investigation experts who work their cases in New York. And each episode is a new crime, which means there's a new cast of characters every week. So the breakdowns for this show are huge. And Lindsay is very excited to help actors. And she loves actors. She is really friendly. And I would recommend this workshop. So this is perfect for the actors to network with an up-and-coming powerhouse casting company. So check her credits out on IMDb.com. Okay? All right. Get out there and start getting some bookings. Get yourself booked. Go to these workshops. Learn how to get yourself booked. All right. So now we move on to the show. Our wonderful lady today, Susie Groff, she is a filmmaker originally from Vienna, Austria. And when she is speaking, you'll sort of hear Arnold, but you'll hear Arnold coming out. But Arnold, when he was on steroids in the 70s, when he was working the muscles out, she attended New York University Tisch School for the Arts, and she studied theater and journalism at the University of Vienna, Austria. She received two Fulbright scholarships and numerous grants for her artistic projects and her academic work. Now, she has also worked as a television producer, interviewing numerous film directors such as Quentin Tarantino, John Waters, Terry Gilliam, and so many more. And also actors like Demi Moore, Michael Douglas, Bruce Willis, and Mel Gibson. And we got to find out a little bit about Mel Gibson later if she wants to share any juicy tidbits. She is presently working on a project called Hansel and Gretel Hunger Fantasy, a new interpretation of an old fairy tale. Oh, that sounds good. Oh, that might also be a porno. We might have to find out from Susie. That sounds a little spicy, Susie. A little spicy. You're going to have to tell us about that one. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
See, everybody, what did I tell you? There it is. I actually love the Australian accent. Austrian. Who doesn't confuse Australia with Austrian once in a while? I mean, for a time, I thought Australia and Austria were the same thing when I was a child. But I love
you're not the only one.
Yeah, I mean, the accent, it's so sexy. It's very Greta Garbo. You know, it's very – I mean, when you speak, I bet you everyone just sits up and, like, watches you speak. I know that you command attention with that voice, right?
Yes. I just get up because I'm very tall, like 7 feet.
Now,
I make myself 7 feet.
Now, would you do me a favor and say, I want to be alone?
I want to be alone.
Oh, my God. You sound like Greta Garbo. Okay. I'm over it. All right. Okay. Let's start with the show's favorite question. When little Susie Graf was a girl, what were you doing? Were you daydreaming about a career in filmmaking? What did you want to be or do when you grew up?
I wanted to be a big movie star in Hollywood.
You did.
And it did not happen. I just became a film director in New York.
Oh, my God. Just a film director in New York. Now, let me see. Why, when you were in Austria, what were you seeing in Austria that made you want to be a big movie star in Hollywood? What was it? What were you watching?
Bambi. I don't remember, but whatever it was, I wanted it.
Okay. Well, that's how I guess we all get started. Now, did you, when you expressed that to your friends and family that you wanted to go in the entertainment business and I guess move to the United States, did you have support from your family and friends? What did they think about it?
Not really. That was sort of outlandish. I didn't have much support, but I did it anyway.
Well, what did they tell you? Did your parents say, well, if you don't pursue a career in, I don't know what your family business was, you're out here?
Well, Austria is sort of conservative, and after I graduated, they put me in a bank, but I got fired.
Well, that didn't last long. Well,
I did not want to be in a bank. Well, and I still don't want to be in a bank. I don't like banks.
Well, you like money, though, right?
But I do.
Well, so what did you do? You grew up. How did you get from Vienna to New York University, Tisch School of the Arts?
It was really... you know, when I was in my 20s or so, I worked in Austrian television as a continuity girl. They don't have those anymore. They're called now continuity persons. But I still was a continuity girl and an assistant director. And, you know, I watched those directors in Austria, and I thought, I can do this much better.
What did a continuity girl do? Was it like a script supervisor?
Yes. Exactly. Script supervisor. That's what it was. And I was an assistant director on a lot of very boring TV crime shows, you know, like Law and Order style shows. And I just thought, this is really exciting. But these shows are not exciting. But filmmaking interested me a lot. And filmmaking wasn't that hot in Austria at the time. So I went to film school in New York. And I was supposed to go home after a couple of years, but after being in New York for a couple of years, Austria wasn't that exciting.
No.
And so I just stayed on.
So you just decided to stay here, right?
Yeah. I'm still there 20 years later.
They haven't kicked you out yet. You're still here, right?
No, I'm still here.
Well, when you came here, had you ever been to America before, or did you just come?
Never.
Wow.
I was like Heidi. I was like, This looks just like in the movies.
Wow. Now, may I ask what decade that was?
No.
Okay. Well, of course it was in 70s or 80s.
That was in the 90s. That
oh, the 90s. Oh. Year,
I think 92 was the year it came.
Oh,
I missed all the 80s. I just saw Dynasty and things like that on television, and I thought, wow, America is really great.
Okay.
And when it came in the 90s, that was over.
That's why I was saying if you came here in the if you went there in the 70s and 80s, that's when it was all fun. You could have been
at
Studio 54.
I missed it.
Yeah, you missed it.
It
started getting boring in 90, 92.
No,
sure.
It wasn't really
now, when boring. You went to, well, it had died down. Let's just say that it was wild prior to 90. But when you, I'm from Connecticut, by the way, so I'm very familiar with what was going on during that time in New York. But when you came here and started school, what did you want to? Did you continue wanting to work on film? Were you even interested in doing theater? Because you know New York is a theater town. What did you want to do?
But NYU has a graduate program, TISH, the TISH program,
right.
And you learn there to be a film director, or you can also learn cinematography and editing and such. And I was always interested in film directing. So that's what I did, and made a couple of short films there. And the interesting thing is there were 50 people in the class. And in the class that I attended, there were 3 girls of 4.
Wow.
4 girls and 46 men. And there was one girl from Japan, one girl from South Africa, and one girl from somewhere else, and me. So one girl from every continent, and lots of American men otherwise.
Wow, well, you had your pick of the litter as far as the men go. Now, let's talk about you. You worked as a television producer interviewing numerous film directors like Quentin Tarantino, John Waters, Harry Gilliam. How did you get into that position where you're interviewing these people?
Well, in Austria, there was this producer, and he did that show for German, Swiss, and Austrian television. And I was their woman in New York, so to say. So they had someone in L.A., and then they had me in New York. And whenever there were big premieres and junkets, press junkets and such, then they would send me there. And so I was a film student, and then I would go and interview these people. And that's what I did, and it was very glamorous, and I was very proud of myself, and I was very excited.
That is very exciting. Now, how did you like Quentin Tarantino?
I did, and you know what the funny thing was?
What?
When I interviewed him, the poster in the background fell down. You know,
oh!
They almost have a poster, and it fell down and on his head, and it was the funniest thing.
No!
And he was the only one that happened, and that was great.
Well, what about John Waters? How did you like John Waters?
Oh, John Waters was great. They sent me to his house. He lived in Maryland.
In Baltimore,
In Baltimore, where his films are, I think, playing too. And we arrived there, and I had a crew, lighting people and such, and they were all gone. And I said, where is my crew? And they were in John Waters' bedroom reading a magazine called Chicks with Dicks. He gave this magazine, and they were not to be seen anymore. And John Waters has at the entrance of his house an electric chair. And I said, what is this? And he said, oh, I like weird souvenirs. And so there was this electric chair at the entrance of the house. And then he said, come and see my guest room. So we went up to the attic, and he showed us the guest room, and there were all these weird things in there. And they said, what is it? And he said, well, people think I'm weird, and they give me all these souvenirs, like this Charlie Manson doll, and I don't know, all this stuff he had up there. And he said, I put this in the guest room so nobody stays long. I want my guests out as soon as possible.
Oh, that's a great idea!
Yeah! And we had a good time. We had a good time at John Waters' house. We had a great time.
Wow. What movie was it that you were going to be interviewing him for? Do you remember? Was it Crybaby or no? No,
I don't know.
Wow. Yeah, he just seems like I met him one time at for one of his films in Maryland, and he just has the best laugh. And he's very funny.
Yeah.
Guy. Now, yeah. Also interviewed Demi Moore, Michael Douglas.
Yes.
Melissa Mel Gibson. Let's break it down. How did you like Demi Moore? You know, I wanted to be Demi Moore. Oh, my God. In the 80s, I wanted to look like her. She was so beautiful. She's so beautiful. But I just wanted to be Demi Moore. Now, what did you do?
Well, maybe not right now.
Huh?
Maybe not right now.
No, not anymore. When I was a teen. But she got all the hot guys, and she was so gorgeous. But how did you like her? What did you interview her about?
Well, you know, they flew us to Washington. It was that movie with the sexual harassment with Michael Douglas. I forgot what it was called. Do you remember what it was called?
Yeah, the one where she was his boss, and she was sexually harassed.
Yes, exactly. So that was the movie they were promoting. And Demi Moore, she was 2.5 hours late.
What?
And, you know, all the people that were very upset because there were all these journalists and she just wouldn't show up. And then they said, well, Demi can do that. She has lunch with a friend and she's just not back. And these people, they had flown in from all over the world.
Oh.
And, you know, she just wasn't there. So I thought it was kind
of
interesting.
I bet they were back. Now, what about Bruce Willis? Were they married at the time? No. No, I don't think back then. I don't know. I have no idea how long they've been married. I know it was a long time ago. But
She was married to Bruce Willis at the time.
She was. Now, I love Bruce Willis. I loved Demi Moore until she married Bruce Willis. Then I was like, no, I don't like you anymore, Demi Moore, because I loved Bruce Willis when he was in the movie, Blue Moonlight or Blue – oh, God, I can't remember it. But he is sexy. Don't you think he's sexy?
He was. I don't know about now, but
no,
he was.
Not now. Back then. Yeah, back in the day. Back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, he seems sexy. And what about Mel Gibson now? How was Mr. Mel Gibson?
Oh, God, I don't remember. It's so long ago.
So long ago.
I don't remember.
The other people.
I don't remember what it was.
Oh, I heard he's a charmer. I heard he's a real charmer.
Yeah.
But he was
very charming. Yeah.
But you had a great opportunity to meet all these people. It seemed like you were having a wonderful time. So let's go forward and talk about what you're doing now. I know that you're working. You just finished a film, and it's called Lost in the Crowd. Now let's talk about what inspired you to. Were you writer, producer, director, and then what prompted you to do this film? Why did you decide to do this?
Well, this film is a documentary, and I don't do documentaries. It was sort of a fluke, and I just happened to learn about this LGBT homeless youth on the street, and I made that film. And I'm glad I did. I learned a lot of things, and actually the film is going all over the world, and it just happens that it coincides with all these efforts that are happening right now, the anti-bullying efforts, because there were all those suicides of LGBT kids, and people finally realized something has to be done. So it just so happens that my film kind of hits a nerve because that's something that people are concerned with now because nobody wants bad young people. So I'm kind of happy that I can contribute with my film to this effort that I made that LGBT youth can find a better place in society.
Now, Lost, the snippet that I got for the film, and you can correct me, it says, Lost in the Crowd, documentary about homeless LGBT youth in New York City. Lost in the Crowd is a film that follows a group of LGBT, mostly transgender youths living homeless in the streets of New York, and that it was shot over 8 years. And the documentary reveals not only the many trials that they may face in their fight to survive in the world that is hostile to their very existence, but also the dreams and desires that keep them going in the face of such harsh reality. And I was interested what was in there is that most of the youth say that the reason that they're homeless in the first place is because that they've been rejected from their families for being gay or transgender. So I really am so happy that this film was made, because I believe it reveals a glimpse into the world that, you know, people hear about. We always hear it on the news, but I don't know if enough support is being given or that enough people care to see or even acknowledge the life or try to help the life or lives of homeless people who are just fraught with just constant danger. It's just dangerous out on the street, especially for the LGBT. So I know that there's not enough shelters out there. There's not enough support. And where do they go to find new families? You know, what's being done? What is happening to help these children?
Well, it's a very complicated topic, and a lot is done, and sometimes it doesn't really work out. It doesn't reach where it should go. It's a large and immensely complicated problem. I found that it is very important to just look at what's really going on a psychological level. And why families reject their children. That was something I was very interested in, because to me the thought to put your child out on the street, I just couldn't believe that happened so often. And then when I interviewed these young people and their parents, I learned why this is happening. And I'm so glad that the film got made, because people need to see this. And it's not only about LGBT people. It's about generations and how to get along, and the understanding that there are options, that we don't have to be locked into a dogma, but that we can learn to get along no matter how strange the other person might act. And that is really what was interesting to me and still is.
Yes. I mean, homeless youth is not just a problem in New York or in the United States. It is a global problem, and people just don't take it serious. I'm not saying all people, but a lot of people just don't really care. And
well, I think it's very frightening to think about what happens when you don't have a home. And young people, they learn or they get, you know, act to be free and to be themselves. And then if they decide to be free and themselves, then they don't have a place to live. And that is a big problem. And on a larger scale, I think all of us have the challenge to find a place in the world where we can be ourselves. But at the same time, we have to support ourselves. So we have to find the means as well. And as we all know, all of us who are artists and want to be creative, we also have to make a living. And young people who have these gender identity situations, it's even much harder for them, because for them it's not about can I be creative or not. But it's how do I fit in? How do I find a place in the world? And then how do I also make a means to take care of myself? And so these problems are shared by all of us. They are not reduced to the LGBT community at all.
Are there enough fundraisers, enough awareness programs, do you feel, being created to take care of the problem? Are people stepping up?
Well, they are, and they are not. So it's only making sense if it reaches the people where they need it, and that is just not always possible. For example, now there are a lot of these anti-bullying efforts in schools, and there is zero tolerance policy and this and that, and that's all coming from the right place. Yes, we want to stop bullying. Everybody wants to stop bullying. Nobody wants more suicides. Nobody wants violence. We are all on the same page here. But at the same time, it's a law in physics. When you suppress something, then it's going to go somewhere else. So it's not only about making an effort and saying, okay, stop it. It's not allowed. But I think it would be much better if people could express how they feel, but then to transform those feelings into something positive. Because if you're not allowed to express how you really feel, then it's just going to come out somewhere else, and it's going to lead to aggression in some other way. And I think it's more important to have awareness and to be allowed to talk and to express, and then hopefully transform it so that something new can happen that I think would be much better.
Now, you have had, because of this film, you have had a successful worldwide film festival run, and you, I think Lost in the Crowd is about to be released, or has it already been released on DVD?
Well, it's about to be released, but it's still, even though it has been all over the world at festivals, it has not been picked up by a major mainstream distributor. So society is not really ready for this subject matter. Anti-bullying is a problem, and that is being addressed. But the transgender situation is a very big taboo. And when we think about it, you know, in a normal family, if a son comes home and says, "Mom, from now on, I'm going to be a girl," or if people have a daughter and she comes home and says, "All right, now I'm going to be a man from now on," that is a challenge that brings destruction to many families. And they cannot handle that onslaught of emotion because they don't know what to do with this information. And it brings chaos into families. And that's what I think it makes people afraid. And I have also a theory why this is so. But it's a long theory, and I don't know if you want to hear it.
Well, what I want to know is, what has the reaction been so far based on what you're getting back is with feedback in reference to the film, with feedback from not only the LGBT community, but the heterosexual community as well? What are you getting as feedback on the film?
Well, people are very touched in general, and they say, "Well, I didn't know that," and they are truly touched, and many people cry when they see the film. So
that's a positive thing, because that's an
emotion.
That's
positive, many people like that there's also parents in the film, and that parents talk from their point of view, because there's many films that show the youth and their side of the story. But you also have the family and the parents and the brothers and sisters on the other side, and in their life it's also a big change if you know, one sibling changes very much and, you know, goes into a very different sort of situation. And so I think people think it's important to watch this film.
Well, I think it's important. Now, where are we going to be able to see it? Is it going to be available for where?
Yes, from the website. You can order it from the website. And there's also negotiations that it's going to be released on a larger level, but that is still in negotiation. But you can definitely order it from the website.
Okay, so if you want to see this film, go to lostinthecrowd.net and order a copy of the film. And they can pay for it right on the website. And
yes.
And you'll send them out a copy. Fantastic.
Yes.
Now, I hear you got another exciting project that you're working on.
Yes.
And I love the title of that, Hansel and Gretel. What is that about? Hansel and Gretel, Hunger and Fantasy.
Yeah.
A new interpretation of an old fairy tale. Have you gone over to the porno world? What is that about? What's
going on,
Susie? What are you doing?
No, it sounds like it, doesn't it? Yeah, well, the Hansel and Gretel is a story that's actually from the Middle Ages, when there was famine and parents couldn't feed their children, and so they sent them into the forest to fend for themselves. Isn't it charming?
Oh, God.
But that was, of course, in the Middle Ages. That's a while ago. But the moral of the story is that you should not touch what's not yours. So the gingerbread house, as seductive as and as you know, sweet and everything as it is, if you touch it, there's a witch inside, and the witch wants to eat you. That's sort of the moral of the fairy tale. And I have just made a modern version and made a hunger fantasy for our times.
Oh, now what? At what stage is the film? Are you in pre-production, production, post-production?
Yeah, actually, right now it's a book. It's an illustrated book, and I've worked on it for the last 6 years. And I always think I'm gonna be finished in the next 2 months, but then I am not. So things take a while with me.
Oh my gosh! Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the movie. You gotta hurry up and get on that. My God, I love that title. Well, hopefully you'll move forward with that and turn it into a film because that is something that I think that a lot of people want to see. I think I think Hansel and Gretel is one of our favorite fairy tales. I think that all fairy tales, I didn't realize this as a kid, but as an adult, I started reading those fairy tale books, and I thought, oh my God, they're scary and spooky and evil.
Yeah.
I mean, if you really read them, they're really violent and hostile little things to be reading to children, aren't they?
But we can learn a lot. And in the olden times, before they had reality TV and all of that, that was the education for people. They learned integrity and how to move in the world, how to lose your innocence, and how to stand up for yourself. That's what fairy tales teach you, amongst other things. And that is something that is coming back into society, because fairy tales are all over the place now. In fact, there is an action movie coming out about Hansel and Gretel, and the premise is Hansel and Gretel 10 years after the gingerbread house.
I did not hear about that. But they have a lot of fairy tales
right now coming out.
Wow, that must be the new thing. Speaking of which, I want to get some advice for the listeners on some career advice. So first of all, let's talk about, what do you feel are 3 to 5 characteristic traits that it takes to make it as a filmmaker? I would imagine
perseverance, definitely perseverance, and to stick to your vision. If you believe that it's important, then it will be important. So it's very important to stick to the vision. I think that's the most important thing.
So speak to the vision. So
stick to the vision.
The vision.
You know, yeah. So when you have a vision and you think it's important, then don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Go out and make your film. Nowadays, it's very possible, very feasible to make a film with the digital cameras that are out there. It wasn't always like that. You know, when I went to film school, we did everything in 16 millimeter and it cost a lot of money. Now everybody has the possibility for a few thousand dollars to make a film. It can be done. And although there is an immense amount of product out there, if you have a vision and if you have a visual language, then your work will be out there.
Now, you said that under career advice, when we asked you for what you wanted to talk about, you said three things. There's always an opening, times are changing fast, and keep an open mind. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, well, if you really want to, you will find an opening. You will find one. If you are looking... And if you insist, that's just how life works. And yes, there are obstacles, but things open up and society changes so quickly. And there were no women film directors around much when I started, very, very few. And now a woman won an Oscar, and there are so many women directing now, and you cannot just go by what happened in the past. Everything is changing, and you can make the change yourself, and don't let anyone tell you otherwise. That is what I would say to anyone out there.
Now, what film genres do you find that you personally gravitate towards, and why?
I like psychological thrillers. And that's what I like. And I know that in the mainstream, it is very difficult to make a big blockbuster movie. But I know that in my environment, I can do work that is important. And I think we all have to be realistic. And, you know, there are the big studio directors, and there is a big power game going on. And if that's what you want to do, then that's very, very difficult. But there are many independent films that people can do. And now with YouTube and, you know, all these new avenues that are out there where people can show their work, there's just endless possibilities. And I think that's very exciting. And you don't have to break the bank. You can make your own movie and put it out there. And that's fantastic.
Yeah. How do you feel about shorts? I feel they're an excellent calling card.
They are.
That if you making a short, a 5 minute, a 10 minute, a 20 minute, I feel that people should, instead of worrying about making a big feature length film if you don't have the damn money and you don't have the connections and stressing yourself out, focus on making shorts. They're like a calling card for you. They're like a business card resume. Yeah. Am I right?
Yeah. Yes. Well, at my heart, I'm an artist. And if you're an artist, you have to do things. You have to make certain films. You have to write something. You have to draw. You find your voice, and you do your product. And I don't think it's so much about anything else. How I feel. And if you need to do it, then you'll do it.
Now, what if you want to be a filmmaker, you want to make a short, but you say you're not a writer, you just want to direct it, or you just want to produce it? What do you do if you're not a writer, but you want to do a short?
Filmmaking in general is about collaboration. So if I wanted to look for help from a writer, I would go and find a writer and either tell the writer, this is the story that I want to do, can you please write it for me, or can you write it with me, we collaborate on it, or I'd go and assign the story that I like, because there's so many talented people out there, they would love to have their stories made into a movie, they would just kill for that. So it's just a matter of going and finding a story that's already there, and then make it into a screenplay.
is as simple as that. Now, I have a question for you. We're going to be wrapping the show up in 5 minutes, but this is a hypothetical question. If a major studio came to you and said, Susie Groff, here's $50 million, go make a movie, what type of movie would you make that you haven't already made, and why?
Oh, my God, that's a difficult question.
I know, and as an artist, yeah. I want to see where your mind goes.
Yeah. Well, I really very much like the Cinderella fairy tale, because it's about envy, and envy is something that is very fascinating in our society. And I think I would make a killer Cinderella version for those $50 million.
Who would you cast as Cinderella?
Oh, I haven't thought about that yet. But, that's
so
a very good question.
So many actors out there. I tell you, the crop of actors, the young actors in our business today, oh, my God, it's just phenomenal. My husband, when we watch some of the younger shows, he says to me, how did these children learn how to act? They actually can act better than veteran actors. Veteran actors.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing? Do you believe that the great actors have natural talent?
Modern acting has to do with that you connect with the material. You find a personal connection with what's in the scene. I happen to know that because I'm a college professor and I am teaching directing the actor. So I'm an expert on this subject too.
Oh, why didn't you tell me this? This is like a whole show that I wanted to cover. I have like 5 questions about that. My darling, are coming back on the show next year, and we're going to talk just about that. Is that a deal?
Of course.
Oh, by Susie Groff. I love it. Now, we only have a couple minutes, but I wanted to talk about what message do you feel that the movies today, I mean, there's so many different movies being done, and it's like a movie for every different type of person. But what movies do you feel are, what messages are there not enough being told through films today? Like, there's so many films to choose from, but do you feel that there's any messages that have been left unsaid, or there are not enough messages coming through on movies today? They're just too violent about murder, death, kill?
Well, films need to make money. They cost a lot of money, so they need to make money. So they appeal, of course, to the basest instincts, which are in general revenge and romance, sex, right? So revenge, violence, and romance, sex, appeals to almost everyone. That's just an instinctual reaction. But there are also films that go into depth psychology. I just saw the other day The Exorcism of Rose. What is her name? The Exorcism of Rose.
I've been too scared to watch that movie.
That movie was so intelligent and so meaningful and so wise. And there are movies out there, but not many. But we all are consumers, and we can choose what we watch, and we can choose what we read, and we can choose what we focus on. And that's our responsibility. But of course, the growth of the product is revenge and romance, because that's what brings, you know, entertainment.
Oh, that's what everyone longs for. So I imagine that'll continue. Last question before we go: What are your favorite movies of all time, and why?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a weird taste. I like movies that people don't like so much. But for instance, I like The Walkabout by Nicholas Roeg, which is about the clash of culture of Western civilization and ancient civilization. It's called The Walkabout. It's from the 70s. It's a very unusual and deep movie, in my opinion. And then I like very much The Beauty and the Beast. I love that movie. It's so beautiful. So it's also a fairy tale, of course. You're with a fairy tale again.
You do like your fairy tales, don't you?
I do like them.
Oh my God,
and The Beauty and the Beast is wonderful, I think, because there's a beast in every man, and there's a beauty in every woman, and vice versa. There's a beast in every woman and a beauty in most men. Right?
I agree, Susan. But I think somebody should write a fairy tale about you, because you're just a little
fairy tale. I would like that. I would like a Hollywood person to write a fairy tale. Then my dream would come true that I had as a little girl.
Well, my dream is to have you and Arnold Schwarzenegger in the same movie. And you could be his sister, right? And yeah, I can totally see it. It's going to be like a Tootsie thing going on. All right, Susie Gruff, we have got to go, but I wanted to thank you so much for being on the show today. You have given our audience so much to think about, and I encourage them to check out your film. Go to lostinthecrowd.net and order a copy. I'm going to order a copy, Susie Gruff, and you are coming back on the show next year and talk about what you teach about, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Susie Gruff. Say goodbye to all the thousands and thousands of people that are listening to you.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Oh, we say you too, Susie Gruff. Thank you for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week
thank
on Question Reality. Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.